Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Tesca has been proclaimed to be the latest member of the Blessed, those people who have actually received the healing miracle that all of the pilgrims have come for. Chapter 24. The sword priest standing outside the barn was not one Tesca had seen before. His head was shaved, his tan and scarred scalp showing the dark stubble of a receding hairline. 7 out of 10 swords accounted for, Tesca thought, as the man silently watched them approach the barn, Liam in the lead and Donal at the back.
"Danis," Liam called, "we've another of the Blessed join us today."
"So I've heard and seen," the other man replied. "Three with you, all coming in?"
"Only 2, Donal said, pointing to Tesca and Yvette. "Travis was carried to the mustering tents last night. Walked back down this morning, he did."
Danis started at that, his eyebrows rising in surprise. "Woman's his wife."
"And I am their father," Sidois insisted. "Am I to be parted from them once more?"
"Already bent the rules to allow your daughter to stay with her husband," Donal informed him. "Your labors in the field await you." Sidois looked as if he might protest, but at last he gave Donal a grudging nod.
"Indeed, brother. Miracles happen, but the work goes on."
He turned to Yvette and Tesca, embracing them both.
"Be well, my children."
"Be well, father," Yvette replied.
"Oh, I shall,"
the old pirate assured her. He caught Donal's eye.
"Surrounded by the faithful, what worries could I have?"
Donal made no reply as Sidois left, trotting across the grass toward the fields.
"Food's inside, Travis. Rest. Regain your strength. When you're fully recovered, your duties begin."
"What will those be?" Tesca asked. Donal nodded.
"You've only arrived last night. You'd not know. All of us here contribute what we can so that all may survive. We've a need here for food, water, safety, sanitation. Blessed provide a different need, they do. Hope."
He nodded again, seeing Tesca and Yvette's puzzled expressions.
"The others will explain."
He gestured to Danis, who turned toward the barn doors and pulled one of them open, revealing a cluster of some half-dozen curious faces peering out at them, especially Tesca.
"Good morrow, Donal," said one man, smiling broadly. "We heard the joyous cries of the faithful this morning, and knew that another would be joining us. This is he?"
"Aye, Barza," Donal said, smiling back at the man. "This is Travis. His wife, Sophie, who sat vigil over him last night, would come among you as well."
"Oh,"
Barza replied, stepping outside to meet them. He was of below-average height, middle-aged, with a short beard and mostly bald head.
"Kalisandra approves?" he asked in a lower voice.
"She does," Donal confirmed.
Barza shrugged.
"Very well, there's room enough."
He looked Tesca up and down.
"Well, come in, you two. I know how hungry one is after receiving this most gracious gift."
He put his hands on Tesca and Yvette's shoulders in welcome.
"Merritt's scheduled for today. Should I send him out?"
"If you would," Donal said. "Whoever's scheduled for tomorrow as well. She thought that to celebrate Travis's blessing, two of you should travel amongst the faithful today."
"She is most wise," Barza agreed. "Bela's scheduled for tomorrow, but I'm sure she'll be glad to move up to today. Perhaps Travis will be ready to enter the rotation in a day or so. The way it sounded, the faithful will be eager to see him again."
"Once more you anticipate her thoughts precisely," Donal said. "Let Danis know if you need anything else."
"I shall,"
Barza told him, ushering Tesca and Yvette into the barn as Danis swung the tall door closed.
"Good day."
It took Tesca's eyes a few moments to adjust to the dim interior of the barn after being outside in the sunlight. When his vision cleared, he and Yvette were surrounded by the rest of the Blessed. There were 7 of them, 4 male, 3 female. At first glance, they looked much the same as the pilgrims Tesca and Yvette had already seen. All adults, ranging from young to middle-aged, wearing plain white clothes stained by travel to a mottled light brown. Some of them showed varying degrees of sunburn, a common occurrence for mainlanders new to the Freeze, but otherwise they looked perfectly ordinary. Tesca wouldn't have given any of them a second thought if he'd passed them on the streets of Kohane or Maipur. Then he realized that was what set them apart. They were in perfect health, displaying no signs of illness or deformity, and while none of them could be called overweight, they lacked the sunken cheeks and half-starved frames of the pilgrims outside.
"This is Travis," Barza said, "our newest arrival. Welcome, welcome."
"And the other?" said another man, studying Yvette suspiciously. He was around Teska's age, with a slender build and thinning hair.
"This is Sophie," Barza explained, "his wife."
"His wife?" exclaimed a woman. "They'd not let my man join me in here."
Barza shrugged, spreading his hands.
"Well, you'll have a chance to see him, Bela. They want to let two of us out among the faithful today, so you'll be going with Merritt."
The woman gave a gasp of delight, while the thin man looked put out.
"Bela needn't come. I can handle matters myself. I have been preparing a sermon, in fact, on the perils of—"
"No, you don't," Bela snapped at him. "Every time you start preaching, they hustle you back in here. Like as not, they'll drag me back in with you."
She flashed Teska a sullen glare.
"All right for some to have their other half join them, it seems, but I've not seen my husband in a week. You're not spoiling that."
Merritt glared at Bela, indignant, and opened his mouth to reply when another woman stepped forward, putting herself between them. She was older, her once raven hair shot with gray.
"They're waiting," she said in a strong Malakan accent, "so out you go. Merritt, save your sermon for another time, and Bela, do not devote all your attention to your husband. You must tend to the needs of all. Now, let us get some food into our newest arrival. We all know how hungry the first morning is."
"Well said, Drian," Barza agreed, fixing Merritt and Bela a patient look. "Don't forget to bring back today's tally of those who've died during the night. We should say an extra prayer for them."
As they turned toward the barn door to leave, Barza led Teska and Yvette deeper into the barn, toward a set of stairs leading up to the hayloft. The musky smell of livestock became stronger, and Teska turned, hearing the whicker of a horse, to see several of the animals in a row of paddocks against one wall.
"Oh, yes," Drian said quietly to him, "they keep all the precious commodities in here."
When he turned to look at her, he could see that she was watching him closely, curious about his reaction to such a sardonic comment. He gave her a noncommittal, hesitant smile, which seemed to amuse her, and she patted his arm in a friendly manner. Swept clean of hay, the loft turned out to be a surprisingly large space, extending more than half the length of the barn's interior. It was brighter up here than Teska had expected as well. Looking up, he saw sunlight pouring in through holes in the roof, filling the dusty space with glowing golden pillars. A large block and tackle hung from the rafters at the back of the barn, beyond the loft, to move heavier objects from one floor to the next. Near the top of the stairs was a single table with several chairs set around it, as well as some crates holding what looked like a small collection of fruits and bread. Beyond the table was a line of cots, separated from each other by hanging sheets of canvas that had once served as tents, but now acted as makeshift walls. They provided a modicum of privacy, but to Teska, the arrangement resembled nothing so much as the horses' paddocks just below them. Barza ushered him and Yvette into chairs and set several pieces of fruit and bread down in front of them.
"This should do for a start," he said, pulling out a chair for himself and sitting down, chuckling as Teska tore into a loaf of bread.
Drian filled two old, chipped mugs with water from a pitcher and set them down as well.
"Do we have any more of that cheese from last night?" she asked Barza.
"Merritt ate the last of it," Barza said with a shrug. "They'll bring us more food tonight. We'll see what we get."
He looked at the new arrivals.
"Did you come in with that caravan yesterday?"
"Yes," Yvette replied.
"Did you receive any donations from farms on your way up?"
She shook her head.
"No, we passed by several farms, but anyone we saw quickly herded their livestock away from the road and did not approach."
Barza shared a grim look with some of the others at that. "I heard Kelisandra say something about foragers when we entered the farmhouse," Teska offered, which drew a surprised look from Yvette and interest from the others around the table. It sounded like she'd already sent them out, and the estimate was 3 days before any of them would be back. She did think there was enough food for that amount of time, though. Barza nodded.
"Well, that's good news."
Standing behind him, another of the blessed nervously put forth a question. Where did the horses come from? He was easily the youngest person there, barely out of his teens, with sandy hair and a worried face. They brought in 4 more horses yesterday.
As if the smell was not strong enough in here, sniffed Drien.
Barza chuckled. This is Harlan, by the way, he said, introducing the young man. But it's a good question. Did those horses come in with you?
Yvette smiled at Harlan as she reached for an apple herself.
Yes, they did, she explained, though you could say they were not so much donated as appropriated.
They were stolen? Harlan asked, looking shocked. Teska set down his empty mug and wiped crumbs from his hands. When someone attacks your caravan and you drive them off, what they leave behind is fair game, don't you think? With one hand, he reached for the pitcher to refill his mug. With the other, he grabbed a bunch of grapes.
The bandits have returned? Asked a tall man, speaking with a Malakan accent. We'd been told they would not be a problem again.
They weren't bandits, Yvette assured him. They were slavers, pursuing the 2 of us and my father.
Slavers? Harlan gasped.
All right, Barza said in a calm voice. There's a tale to be told and a right way to tell it. Let them fill their bellies and get settled in before pestering them with questions.
He drummed his fingers on the table, thinking as Teska continued to eat.
Another horse or two wouldn't be bad to help with the field work, but I doubt they've enough fodder for this many more.
He chuckled.
Like as not, we'll be getting a bit of fresh meat in the next day or two.
There were rueful chuckles all around, but no objections, telling Teska that while all of these people looked better fed than the pilgrims outside, they were no strangers to hunger themselves. Barza then gestured to the other 2 people standing around their table.
To round out the introductions, this is Claude, he said, pointing to the taller man who had asked about the bandits.
He was in his late 30s, with a rangy build and a guarded look on his face.
And here's Gwynnen, Barza finished, indicating a short, stocky woman who let her hair fall across most of her face and seemed to hide beneath it.
Claude, Drien asked, do we have any cots to spare?
There might be 2 left, the man replied.
His accent sounded more provincial than Drien's, but Teska wasn't familiar enough with Malakan to identify which region Claude hailed from.
We will need more for when the triad next gifts us.
Good point, Barza said. I'll make mention of it to Donal when they bring Merritt and Bela back.
Perhaps you and Harlan could get those cots and set them up in the corner, Drien asked.
As the men left, she turned to Gwynnen.
And, dear, do you think you could find another sheet of canvas and put it up, to give them a bit of privacy?
After a moment, Gwynnen nodded and left, her hair bobbing like a mane.
A shy one, our Gwynnen, Drien explained. Speaking was very difficult for her before, and she is out of practice. In any case, it is best to have you settled in as quickly as possible.
Our thanks, madame, Yvette said. Teska nodded agreement, now taking the last apple from the table.
So, Barza said as Drien took a seat, think you've the strength to tell your story now?
Teska did not miss the skillful way Barza and Drien had sent the other blessed away for a more private conversation. He sighed, taking one bite of the apple, now savoring the flavor. His hunger was blunted, but his body was craving something more substantial than bread and fruit, and he had to admit that the idea of eating horse flesh didn't revolt him nearly as much as he thought it might.
Well, he said after swallowing, I imagine you're as curious about us as we are about you. Trade?
There was something about Barza that reminded him of a traveling merchant, eager to see fresh faces, curious for news, and comfortable with haggling. His guess was confirmed by Barza's widening smile.
Trade, then, 1 for 1.
Fair and fair, Teska replied, remembering a phrase his father had often used at the conclusion of a deal.
So, my story. Sophie and I were coming to the Abbey with her father. They were the ones in need of healing when we started out, not I.
That earned an eyebrow raise from Barza, but Teska smiled and took another bite of his apple.
All right, my question.
When we were in the farmhouse, Kelisandra said that we have responsibilities, and just before we came in here, Donal said that the Blessed provide the others with hope. Is that what Merritt and Bela are doing? Barza nodded.
Providing hope's a good way to describe it. Each day, at least one of us goes out and travels through the camp. We talk to the others, hear their woes, pray with them. We keep their hopes alive. Our presence reminds them why they came here.
He smiled.
And, I suppose, it reminds us where we came from. I know I feel that way.
Next to him, Drien nodded in agreement.
Then we're brought back in here for the night.
Teska saw Barza's face tighten on that last sentence, and he began thinking of the next question he wanted to ask.
You didn't start out in need of healing, Barza went on, but you're the one who received the gift. What happened?
Stabbed by an armorback while escaping off a slaver ship in Maipur Harbor, Teska said, nodding as Barza's eyes went wide. The wound festered. No one thought I'd make it. Last night they took me up to the mustering tent. This morning I woke up like this.
He took note of the fact that Barza and Drien were surprised by that answer, but that didn't distract him from his next question. Why do the sword priests bring you in for the night?
Kalisandra says it's for our protection, Barza replied after a moment. She says the monks will try to take us inside the abbey to experiment on us.
He shrugged.
It's what she tells us. I've been on this plateau longer than she has, but she's been inside. We haven't.
He gave Teska a curious look.
The monks will want to get a look at you, that's for sure. You're the first of us to be healed from a mortal wound.
He smiled, seeing Teska and Yvette's reaction.
Not as surprising as it sounds, you know. Anyone who sets out for this place already on their deathbed doesn't survive the journey.
Drien nodded in sad agreement.
All the things we were suffering from, Barza went on, we'd endured for years. Like as not they'd be the death of us one day, but not the next day. Take my meaning?
I do, Teska answered. That wasn't your question, was it?
Barza ruefully chuckled, tapping a finger against his temple.
Right, right. Might be healed, but I'm no smarter than I was before.
I won't count that one, Teska said, smiling back at him. Ask another.
Barza nodded in thanks.
Before you came here, what did you do?
I was part of the city watch in Trevon after I married Sophie. Before that, I was a ranger serving the Duke of Gedeon.
Ah, I knew it, Barza said, waggling a finger at him. You've the look of a fighting man about you. And one of the rangers. Saved my father a peck of money over the years they did, chasing them bandits from the Broken Lands. No man can say a word against them in my hearing.
Teska grinned, hiding his sudden disquiet. You're from Gedeon.
Born and raised, Barza said proudly. I'm guessing that's not your question either.
No, Teska laughed. But to be fair, I'm originally from Ferlin. Rangers did a good turn for my dad and his caravan as well. When I grew up, I joined them.
Barza whistled. Ferlin? Top of the map, that is. You're a well-traveled lad.
Teska shrugged. Let's see, another question. He wanted to learn more about the source of Barza's grudge against the sword priests, but he suspected that another direct question would make the man suspicious. But there was something else that he did want to know. I was delirious with fever when I was healed. I don't know what was real and what wasn't. What was it like for you? What do you remember?
Barza and Drien shared a glance, and Drien nodded.
We were wondering when you'd come to that question, Barza told him. We all do, at least once. Some don't like to talk about it, believe in such a gift should never be questioned. The rest of us, though, the Triad hailed us for a reason. We see no harm talking to each other. Maybe we find out what that reason is. Besides, he added with a chuckle, there's not much else to do in here but talk.
I understand, Teska replied. I feel the same as you. I want to know what happened and why.
Barza nodded.
Well, let's start with the what. We've noticed a few things each healing has in common. First, it always happens at night, same as it did for you. Second, there's never any witnesses, no one at hand to see the miracle take place.
He glanced at Yvette.
Wait, didn't Donald say your wife sat the vigil with you?
Yes, she was there, Teska said, looking at Yvette. He brushed his lips reflexively as the vague memory of a kiss suddenly floated up from the recesses of his mind, and was surprised to see Yvette blush and look away from him. But you were outside the tent when I woke up.
I stepped outside before dawn, Yvette explained, tears welling in her eyes. I thought you had already gone to the final muster, and the air inside the tent. Others had died in there before you, and I couldn't breathe that reek any longer.
It's all right, Teska said, taking her hand. The smell was one of the things that drove me out of the tent this morning.
So you left the tent, Barza asked, and you didn't go back inside?
I fell asleep, she admitted with a sad laugh. The air was clean, the night was warm, and I was so tired.
Barza gave her a sympathetic smile, then looked back at Teska.
So your wife left the tent. Do you remember anyone else there?
You said each of us were alone, Teska began, but then another flicker of memory came back to him. A hand touched my face.
I've wiped your brow many times over the past few days, Yvette offered. Could you be remembering that?
No, Teska said. I remember that, but this was different, and I saw a blue sky. Above, below, everywhere I looked, clear blue sky, no clouds, no sun. And that's the last thing I remember.
Blue sky?
Barza asked, glancing at Trienne, who shook her head.
That's new. None of us remember anything like that. But the sense of someone being there with you, right at the end, that's not.
All of us remember someone coming to them that night, Trienne agreed. Some remember a hand touching their face or arm. Some saw a shadow in the dark, a figure leaning over them. But no one remembers anything more than that.
She smiled.
That is what happened. As to the why, I believe it is the daughter.
The daughter herself? Yvette gasped.
Who else could it be? The older woman replied. Kelisandre and her men obey the dictums of the sun. The monks serve an aspect of the father. The daughter grieves at the rift between them, and so she heals the innocent, forgotten in this petty struggle between commander and abbot. That is her way. It is her will in this, I am certain.
Are you saying that the healings began after a rift developed between the sword priests and the monks? Yvette asked.
Barza and Drien shared a surprised look.
Well, no one's put it quite like that before, Barza muttered, but the timing's right. Folk didn't start waking up healthy until after Kelisandre and her boys left the abbey and moved into the farmhouse.
He looked up as Claude and Harlan came back.
Did we have two cots?
Oui, Claude replied, and no more to spare.
I'll definitely tell Dennis that when they bring Merritt and Bela back in,
Barza said with a nod. He half rose from the table, looking toward the sleeping area of the loft.
Looks like Gwynin's near done with hanging some canvas as well. You two should get some rest.
Teska wanted to ask more questions, but Barza was already standing and Drienne was pushing back her chair.
A good idea, he said, standing up himself and taking Yvette's hand, though I was enjoying our question game.
Barza laughed.
There's plenty of time to talk. You and your wife should take some time to thank the Triad for choosing you, and think about how best to serve them for it.
Yvette smiled gratefully at Barza as she tugged Teska toward the cots. Gwynin studiously avoided eye contact as she passed them, bobbing her head once in acknowledgement. The space that had been set up for them was slightly wider than the others to allow for the two adjoining cots. Teska let the canvas barrier fall, blocking the loft and the watching eyes of the other blessed from view. He turned to Yvette.
Well, here we are.
She gave him a nervous smile, then glanced past him and tugged at her ear. He nodded in silent agreement.
They're all on the other side of the loft right now, he said in her ear. I think if we keep our voices low, we won't be overheard.
Oui,
she agreed, sinking onto one of the cots.
I do not think a bit of sleep would go amiss, however.
Teska chuckled, yawning as he stretched out on the other cot.
You're right about that. I've been lying down for the past few days, but I wouldn't consider any of it restful.
Yvette turned around on her cot, now facing him.
Will you lift your shirt, please?
Teska obliged, and she peered down at his chest. But she was not looking at where he'd been stabbed. Instead, she was looking everywhere else.
I thought so, she whispered. I wasn't in a state to be sure of anything when you came out of the tent.
What is it?
I've been tending your wound for days. Your skin's become a familiar map to me.
She shook her head in wonder.
But the map's been altered. You had a long scratch here.
she demonstrated, running a finger across his right upper chest. That scar's gone. Tesca put a hand to the spot, pushing her finger aside. It was an old scar. Titus Satax had given it to him on the first day Lorenas had allowed him to spar with edged steel. But now there was nothing. He moved his hand lower, seeking another memento. 2 years ago, he'd tumbled down a flight of stairs, locked in combat with a Fane agent pursuing one of Galen's informants. The man had ended the role with the retort in his heart, so Tesca felt the pain of a cracked rib was a fair exchange. But ever after, there had always been a slight bulge under the skin where the bone had knit back together. That, too, was gone.
"It's like Liam was saying. You've been reborn," she breathed in wonder. "Truly, a miracle."
He sat up and took his shirt off, examining his skin more closely. "Not completely reborn," he replied after a moment, showing her his hands. "Kalissandra commented on these, remember? The old scars, a patina of nicks and cuts accumulated over years of training and service, were still there, untouched." Then a thought came to him, and he stood up.
"What are you doing?"
she asked, giving a nervous laugh as he began to undo his pants. "Look at this," Tesca told her, turning his right side toward her and pointing to a faint red line on his thigh. He examined the mark himself for a few more moments, then hiked his pants back up and sat back down on the cot. "Garrick Cabot fired a pistol at me while we were in the quad," he explained, "not long after we set out for Maipur. The shot left a deep graze that was healing cleanly, but now it looks like something I suffered months ago instead of weeks. I don't think it'll even leave a scar now. But the scars on my hands and lower arms look the same as they always have."
"What are you saying?" she asked him.
"I'm not sure," Tesca told her. "If I was reborn, as you put it, I shouldn't have scars anywhere, maybe not even the calluses on my palms. It's like whatever healed me was centered around the knife wound, so other injuries nearby were also repaired, but the effect only went so far." He frowned. There was something about this that was familiar, but he couldn't identify it. Fact and fever dream were still too mingled to be sure of anything. He yawned.
"Maybe more will come to me after some sleep."
Yvette smiled and gently pressed him back down onto the cot.
"Then sleep. Maybe talking to Baza and Trienne again will provide more clues."
She curled up on her cot, turning to face him.
"You startled me for a moment there."
"Did I?"
"Before you showed me that scratch on your leg."
She shook her head in weary humor.
"I'll say I'm your wife, but I'm not taking the role that far."
Then she reached over, moving a lock of hair out of his face.
"Not here, at any rate. I doubt the cot could handle it."
"Oh, really?" She nodded, now yawning herself.
"Oh, yes, definitely."
Her eyelids fluttered closed.
"Far too fragile."
Tesca said nothing, only chuckling once more before his eyes closed, and sleep took him. This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.